Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon, so if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show.
You are listening to the Star Lores podcast. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Space chess.
No game of the Jarrick can be won without pawns, and this may prove to be a very long game.
Navigator, father, master tactician, uncle, remover of limbs. Chewbacca was all of these things. The only force in the galaxy strong enough to kill Chewie was gravity. On Kashyyyk, in 200 BBY, a female bore the Wookiee chieftain Atichitakuk, a son, who they named Chewbacca. Chewie's parents had another pup named Kalabal. Like her mother, though, precious little information concerning Kalabal was survived in the vicissitudes of history. While still a young Wookiee, that is prior to the age of 100 galactic standard years, Chewie became well known for his skill in navigating up and down the Rorschach tree, as well as feats of mechanical aptitude. At some point in his youth, possibly circa 185 BBY, he took part in a coming-of-age ceremony. In a Wookiee society, a youth came of age typically by an act of courage and skill, such as plucking a siren fiber or defeating a Terran Tatic in battle. When still a Kashyyyk resident, Chewie lived mostly in the treetop city of Wook-Roro with his family. However, once he had come of age, his thirst for adventure was greater than any single planet could quench. He relocated to the planet's capital city, Kachiro. It was built on platforms projecting radially from the trunk of a 984-foot-tall Rorschach tree, which locals called Vikilin. Several other large trees were also hollowed out and inhabited. Kachiro was typical of Wookiee settlements, and Wook-Roro was built in a similar style. What most tourists from the wider galaxy rarely think of about Kashyyyk are its crystal blue oceans and soft white sand beaches. Kachiro had off-the-beaten-path beaches, as well as the awe-inspiring Rarcher Forest to enjoy. But Chewie didn't move there to take in the scenery. He soon found work with the Klatuvak Guild, which had their headquarters there. The Guild was a Wookiee organization of hyperspace explorers who carefully hid their astro-navigation charts, selling routes piecemeal to the highest bidder. While working with the Guild, he continued to improve his mechanical acumen and eventually rose to a high position. The Guildmaster, Gumbaki, entrusted Chewbacca with the custody of an encrypted hologrid containing all of the Klatuvak's secret astro-navigational charts. This data was powerful enough to tempt various operatives of both the CIS and the Republic to acquire it from the Guild during the Clone Wars, but Gumbaki was unyielding. Acquiring the charts were in fact why the CIS invaded Kashyyyk. Because of Chewie's exotic native language, Shriwook, few non-Wookiee beings can understand him. Han Solo, and eventually the entire Solo clan, could, but they are exceptions. So Chewie never spoke much about his mastery of an ancient game of strategy, Dejarik. Sometimes referred to as Holochess, this game was played in many cantinas and to kill the time during long space flights. Although its current form is high tech, played with holographic, fully animated pieces, it has an ancient history. Originating with the Jedi Order, this game of logic and tactics has enjoyed widespread popularity throughout the galaxy. In it, the object is to defeat the opponent's king, while simultaneously protecting one's own. When the enemy king is defeated, the game is over. Not only was Chewie a master of this gamified version of Battlefield Command, but he was also a master of real battle, both in getting his claws dirty and positioning his pawns tactically to earn a victory. There is a saying about making Wookiees angry. Doing so can end in limb removal. So, a Trandoshan slaver during the height of the Empire learned this lesson firsthand, as it were. Trandoshans and Wookiees have a kind of interplanetary rival in the Kashyyyk system. The warm-blooded furry Wookiees come from the planet Kashyyyk, the third one orbiting that star, while the reptilian Trandoshans come from the world Trandosha, at the fifth orbital position. Great size and ferocity were the traits a Trandoshan looked for in their religiously motivated hunts. Naturally, their system neighbors on Kashyyyk made ideal prey. During the Clone Wars, Trandosha collaborated with CIS forces to invade Kashyyyk, intending to start a slaving industry there. The Confederacy may have been defeated at the battle, but the Trandoshans were still able to achieve their grim objectives on the world. Incredibly, they managed to convince Imperial quartermasters that the powerful and notoriously violent Wookiees would be good slaves. The Empire spent enormous amounts of credits purchasing Wookiees, but presumably saved more on labor costs. Many Wookiees were forced to build the Death Star. The Maw installation, cradle of many of the Empire's superweapons, was also built largely by enslaved Wookiees during the Imperial period. For some bizarre reason, the Empire thought that in addition to awesome physical power, Wookiees lacked sufficient intelligence for insurrection. Chewbacca himself is proof of the opposite. The Empire should have known how dangerous he was, given his command role at the Battle of Kashyyyk during the Clone Wars. Furthermore, the Klatuvak Guild composed of Wookiees, had operated for centuries by that time, and were custodians of some of the most sophisticated data in the galaxy. Their charts were valuable enough to invade the planet over. But then, after the suppression of Kashyyyk, the Empire had outsourced the dirty work of actually rounding up live sentient beings at the barrel of a blaster and forcing them into cages. Space cowboys like So probably never did much research in Imperial archives about Clone War era military commanders. That does not mean, however, that he was not an astute observer. He learned much about the dynamics of clan relationships among Wookiees and used this knowledge to his advantage. After a raid, So's slave ship departed Kashyyyk with a hold full of living products. The individuals were chosen by So to be a culturally diverse selection. Many different clans were represented by a few dozen Wookiee captives. Like many anthropoids, Wookiee are as prone to strong friendship as they are to everlasting hatred. As such, clan rivalries were commonplace, with blood feuds often lasting generations. By choosing members from different clans, So intended to promote intergroup conflict, which would then prevent them from working together towards escape. This tactic worked well for a while, until he captured the wrong Wookiee. Whether scaling kilometer-high Rorschach trees like a spider exploring the benighted Shadowlands, blowing up invading robots, or charting hyperspace routes, Chewie was comfortable with danger. So and his cronies didn't scare the Wookiee at all. The venerable spacer delivered a rousing speech to his fellow captives and convinced them to set aside their petty disagreements in the service of liberty. In a demonstration of his improvisational and mechanical skill, Chewie used various bits of scrap found in the holding cell to build a fusion cutter, which he used to slice through the holding cell, release the other captives, and overwhelm the crew of the slave ship. Although Trandoshans are regarded as being physically stronger than many sentients, when in unarmed combat with a Wookiee, they are always forked. In the melee that followed Chewie's rousing speech, So fell victim to the classic Wookiee fight tactic, amputation. Quadruple amputation, in So's case. Being a reptilian, this might not have been as immediately life-threatening to him as it is for mammals, who would very quickly bleed out after such a catastrophic injury. The green annal lizard, for example, will self-amputate their tail, a behavior called autotomy. For the lizards, regenerating a tail takes about 2 months. Another Trandoshan slaver, after a similar fight with a Wookiee, fell victim to amputation. In this case, however, his limbs grew back to a fully functioning form within a short period. It took decades for So to grow back spindly, almost non-functioning limbs. A multi-layered death trap.
The incident aboard the slave ship was not Chewbacca's first adventure or immersion in combat. With a life that spanned 2 centuries and a thirst for thrills, it was barely a footnote. The trees of Kashyyyk, like the Wookiees, were extremely tall, strong, and long-lived. Some trees were about 50,000 years old and several kilometers high. These Rorschach trees formed the backbone of Kashyyyk's incredible ecosystem and Wookiee culture. Wookiees believed in the existence of one Rorschach tree called the Tree of Life, from which all life on their planet was born. Given the incredible biodiversity and biodensity of Kashyyyk, it is no surprise that its many plants play important roles in Wookiee culture, a belief in the consciousness of plants and other inanimate objects, is called animism and has been documented in many cultures by xenoanthropologists. While many of the shamans of these societies might not be communicating to plants in a scientifically objective way, they are on Kashyyyk. Many of the local plants have consciousness, like the sentient Neti from elsewhere or the crystalline forests on the world of Aithor. Chewbacca and Wookiees like him fashioned deadly bowcasters from the vines of the Kithish plant. For decades, Chewie kept a few of the dried vines in his bandolier. Bowcasters were typically gifts, their maker bequeathing them to a treasured friend. On Kashyyyk, crowded as it is with animals and plants trying to find lunch in a Wookiee, the weapon is much needed. It fires energy-enveloped metal quarrels in a wide spread, and is used like a shotgun or fletchet kind of weapon. Despite its rustic origins and construction method, a bowcaster is a fine weapon to have in any armed conflict across the galaxy. A volley shot from a bowcaster at optimal range could easily pulverize and shatter blaster-resistant armor, destroying the vulnerable flesh beneath. Unlike slug throwers, bowcasters utilized a magnetic pulse generated by each of the polarized orbs at each end of the bow to fire the projectiles, rather than combustion. Chewbacca used a bowcaster in battle during most of the skirmishes he was involved in. Although Wookiees can be the most loyal of friends, as previously seen, making an enemy of one is not advisable. They are an armed society. Whether a bowcaster, a handcrafted vibro sword, or their deadly claws and powerful muscles, Wookiees are always dangerous. Their treetop villages were located in the seventh and safest lair in Kashyyyk's multi-layered death trap, as Admiral Gilad Pellion once said of the world. Very few Wookiees are brave or stupid enough to go below the fourth level of the Rosher canopy. In the lower levels, even the plants are extremely deadly. As one option for a coming-of-age ceremony, many Wookiees risk their limbs in the maw of one of these plants. Their companions hold the deadly and strong petals of the Siren plant as aspiring youth reaches inside to pluck the fibers from the flower. If the strength of their companions wavers for even a moment, the petals snap closed with enough force to sever an arm. Some Wookiees, like Chewie's nephew and fellow inheritor of the Baka suffix, Lobaka, wore a fashionable belt made from the fibers that resembled a serpent. Tyrantiteks, survivors of the Great Hunt, proliferated in the Shadowlands, the floor of the Rosher Forest. These were quite similar in body form to Rancors, but covered in a carapace-like armor and fueled by the dark side. Like many such descendants of Sith alchemy, they were attracted to dark side nexuses, which abounded in the Shadowlands. For Chewie and Lobaka, their adventures in the deadly realm beneath their idyllic treetop villages were something of a family tradition. The ancient patriarch of their patrilineal line, Baka, also had a habit of exploring the Nothar world, as the Shadowlands were sometimes called. Chewbacca, Lobaka, and Weebaka inherited the Baka suffix due to the namesake's many great deeds. Although intergroup violence can be high among Wookiees, one of the strategies they use to manage this violence is ritualized combat, using swords and honoring blood feuds. To draw one's claws in combat, however, is subject to the strictest taboo. Wookiees who do so are branded as Mad Claws and exiled to the Shadowlands. Mad Claws typically suffer greatly in their exile and can become violent, attacking anybody on sight. Chewbacca himself had to do battle with one of these mad Wookiees during the courtship of his wife, Milotabuck.
Wookiee Planet C.
You've won the day again. Chewbacca's strategies are bearing fruit.
Not all the planets in the Kashyyyk system are terrestrial. Olaris is a massive Jovian world. Like many planets of that designation, it is orbited by a number of smaller rocky moons. One of the moons, Olaris Prime, supported life and was rich with raw materials. For most of its history, it went unnoticed by the wider galaxy, even by its planetary neighbors and keen space beings, the Wookiees. Sometime between 59 and 56 BBY, however, somebody noticed, and the uninhabited moon was finally rediscovered. Strangely, this distant world in the hinterlands of the Kashyyyk system had flora and fauna in common with Kashyyyk, although it supported no known sentience. Kashyyyk was awarded colonization rights only after a protracted legal battle with the Trade Federation, who also wanted to colonize Olaris Prime. In 36 BBY, Chief Atichitikuk was given the responsibility of commanding the colonization effort. Being a well-respected leader by the time, with experience gained from founding a number of villages on Kashyyyk, he was an easy choice to head up this mission. He brought a nephew of his, named Shoran, in on the expedition. He also chose to bring his son, Chewbacca, along. Atichitikuk was no fool, and he was sure to bring an arsenal of bowcasters and other small arms, should the colonists need to defend themselves from some of the wild world's most dangerous inhabitants. Most importantly, however, Jedi Knight Qui-Gon Jinn and his Padawan learner were sent to the Council to assist with the mission. Losing the legal battle was not enough to discourage the Trade Federation from attempting to extract a profit from Olaris Prime. They had landed their own robotic colonists, in contradiction to the Senate's decision, before the Wookiee colonists arrived. The two factions eventually began exchanging blaster bolts. Atichitikuk was nearly killed in one firefight, though Chewbacca and a squad of Wookiees, along with Jinn, were able to deactivate the small droid army. Unfortunately, the Kashyyyk system had not seen the last of the Trade Federation. Chewie would turn many more of their assets to scrap a few decades later. Near the end of the Clone Wars, the CIS was desperate for an edge against the Republic. The Klatovic Guild would not part with their legendary navigational charts for any price. So the CIS invaded Kashyyyk in 19 BBY, hoping to pillage Kichero and the Guild of their secrets. Chewbacca played a central role in the battle and fought alongside Jedi's Quinlan Vos and Luminar Unduli. Together, they reduced droid platoons to molten slag. Following Order 66 and the founding of the Galactic Empire, Kashyyyk was renamed Wookiee Planet C, as it was the third planet orbiting the Kashyyyk star. As it was previously a member of the Galactic Republic, it fell under the jurisdiction of the successor state. The Wookiees, however, were not pleased with their new government, and an insurrection started soon after the first Battle of Kashyyyk. A few weeks later, Darth Vader and Moff Tarkin were dispatched to suppress the rebels. Tarkin had recently been given the responsibility of overseeing the Death Star's construction, and in the Wookiees, he saw a source of labor for the mega project. As per Emperor Palpatine's orders, every juvenile male and female on the world were to be pressed into the service of the Empire. Wookiees were reclassified as semi-sentient and therefore subject to enslavement under Imperial law. Trandoshans were no doubt delighted that they could hunt such glorious prey legally and could then make a fortune selling their quarry. The Mar Tarnor Slaving Council also dealt heavily in Wookiees, among several other prominent sentient species. The Council had noticed that the physically robust species like Amorians or Gigorans received the highest prices in the market. When it became legal to enslave Wookiees, they quickly set up shop on the sector neighbor, the Kashyyyk system. During the Empire's reign and years prior to meeting Han Solo or Luke Skywalker, Chewie was a rebel in his own right and was perhaps more so than most of his contemporaries in the rebellion, a freedom fighter. He sabotaged the efforts of countless slavers on his world. Though he was successful at this, it was only a matter of time before he was captured or killed by Imperial forces.
Thrice freed. When the Empire's power was at its zenith, a young lieutenant in the TIE Fighter Corps was ordered to deal with brigands attacking a slave ship in deep space. A talented academy graduate, Han Solo, was relatively inexperienced as an officer. His real strength, his reason for attaining the officer position so early in his military career, were his superior piloting abilities. Solo's squadron TIE fighters fired upon the brigand ship, disabling it. The damage was enough to knock the ship's pilot, Chewbacca, unconscious. Furious over the trouble Chewie had caused, the Imperial commander ordered Lieutenant Solo to kill the defenseless Wookiee. The lieutenant refused. Eventually, the commander decided that he didn't want to kill Chewie after all. The Empire was paying good credits to acquire these, quote, animals. They were valuable. Chewie was treated cruelly, even by slavery standard. For a time, Commander Nyklis forgot about Solo's insubordination. One day, after inciting the commander's rage, Chewie was bound and subjected to a merciless session of whipping as punishment, done in a public space. The torture proceeded without cease until Chewie was at the brink of death. Lieutenant Solo put a forceful stop to the torture, and together he and Chewbacca escaped the Empire. Thereafter, Chewie owed a life debt to Han. The conditions of this ancient Wookiee custom were that in exchange for saving a Wookiee's life, the Wookiee is honored to bound to protect and serve their savior for the rest of their lives. The bonds that tie Wookiee families are tight indeed, but a life debt can sever them. Chewie abandoned his wife, Mala Tobuk, or Mala, to serve his life debt. He would be a personal bodyguard, navigator, mechanic, childminder, and best friend to Solo. For a few years, they gallivanted across the stars, playing cards, breaking hearts, and dodging bounty hunters. When Han and Leia began having children, Chewie extended his life debt to cover all of the Solos. Chewie had to have had time to visit Mala at least once, though, as in one BBY, she bore him a son, who they named Lumpowerwump. In zero BBY, Chewie and Han landed their ship, the Millennium Falcon, on the backwater world of Tatooine, at a settlement most known for its prodigious scum and venomous villains, Mos Eisley. They headed to Chowman's Cantina for a refreshing drink and maybe a relaxing game of Dejarik for Chewie. Droids weren't allowed in the bar, so he wouldn't have to deal with their flawless logic as he commanded his small army of hollow monsters. An old man approached Chewie, asking about passage to the Alderaan system. They had met before, but humans don't age like Wookiees. When they last met, Obi-Wan Kenobi was a scrawny youth, still wet behind the ears, and with an unfortunate hairstyle, denoting his Padawan position in the Jedi Order. The man next to him that day in Chalmers had pure white hair, like a Wookiee silverback. Surely it wasn't the same Kenobi he met on Alaris Prime. Chewie introduced the old man to Han, and they made arrangements while Chewie decided to dust off his Dejarik skills against Kenobi's droids back aboard the ship. After infiltrating the Death Star with Kenobi, then rescuing Princess Leia, Han and Chewie were handsomely rewarded. Solo was only after rewarded, so he and Chewie left the base at Yavin 4, never intending to return. Something about that didn't sit right with Chewie. The base they narrowly escaped from, that was the reason the Empire orbitally bombarded Kashyyyk 20 years prior. The Death Star was the place so many enslaved Wookiees were sent to work over the last 20 years. It was the reason he was estranged from his family. The place he'd risked his countless times to keep innocent Wookiees from being sent to. Chewie'd wanted vengeance, justice. Eventually, he convinced Han to return to the Yavin system, and the rest is history. Like much of the battle-weary rebels, Chewie was brought back into fighting not long after the Battle of Endor. The first order of business was liberating Kashyyyk from Imperial influence. With that finished, Chewie went on to fight in the Battle of Bakura, the Empire's next major loss after the death of the Emperor. With the denouement of the Galactic Civil War apparently over, Han and Chewie headed back to the forest moon of Endor and spent some time with the Ewoks they had befriended in the previous battle. Only weeks later, the extragalactic Nagai arrived with their fleet in the galaxy far, far away. Han and Chewie encountered this firsthand when they encountered another trip to Kashyyyk to visit Chewie's family. While there, they discovered Nagai slavers and Wookiee collaborators attempting to capture slaves. Chewie and company liberated the slaves and drove the remaining Nagai away. This was the opening salvo of the Nagai Toph War, and Chewie was fighting at the side of the heroes of Yavin again. Later, when relative peace returned to the galaxy, Chewbacca resumed his family life and brought Mala and Lumpy back to Coruscant. The young Wookiee was stimulated by the concrete jungle of the city, and father and son had a few misadventures there. The family did not permanently relocate to Coruscant, however, and soon returned home. It would be several years before Chewie returned to Kashyyyk for Lumpawarump's coming-of-age ceremony. Rather than risking life and limb trying to pluck fibers from carnivorous plant or doing battle with a dark side abomination, Lumpawaru went up against the Imperial Remnant. Normally, he would have gone down to the Shadowlands for some dangerous task, but his father's work interrupted the event. Chewie received a communication from the Alliance that Solo had been captured by enemy forces. The itinerant father gathered his son and a few trusted companions and departed Kashyyyk, foregoing the scheduled ceremony. Together with his father and uncle, Chewie's progeny destroyed a super star destroyer and rescued Han Solo from its brig. These events became the ceremony, and Lumpawarump was renamed Lumpawaru as a token of his adulthood. The Kintam Strider Death Gambit.
Goodbye, Tarfor. Goodbye, Chewbacca. Miss you, I will.
In the Wanshok Desert of Kintan lives a creature of legendary ferocity, the Kintan Strider. These bipedal creatures share both Saurian and mammalian features. They have normal anthropoid skulls, but almost no neck. Their upper body looks similar to a primate musculature that has undergone extensive hypertrophy. The lower body is reptilian, complete with talons, rather than toes, and a stubby tail. In their three-fingered hands, they hold a stone hammer of enormous size. Clearly, only a creature with muscles as huge as a strider's could heft the implement above its head and use it effectively as a weapon. They are clearly intelligent, but they are not interested in communicating to other beings. Striders prefer to smash other beings before talking to them. For this reason, the ancient Jedi who designed Djarik made the Kintan Strider the most powerful piece in the game. Normally too important to risk losing, a highly strategic player would sometimes position their Strider in such a way as to be captured by their opponent. Executed properly, this feint lured the opponent into a devastating position. This is called the Kintan Strider Death Gambit, sacrificing the most powerful piece in order to set up the victory. In 25 ABY, tragedy struck, not the least of which was the destruction of an entire planet by the Yazongvong. Dobido, the moon of a planet called Cern Pidal, had a catastrophic change in its orbit. Though unknown at the time, this was one of the opening plays of the Vong invasion of the galaxy. A member of the Vong's biotech menagerie, the Davin Bessel, is capable of manipulating gravitational fields. The Vong's advanced fleet was detected by Cern Pidal, and not wanting the rest of the galaxy to know of their presence, they decided to destroy the world. They surreptitiously placed a Davin Bessel somewhere on the world, and it then used its telekinetic powers to destabilize Dobido's orbit. The orbit decayed rapidly, and it soon became clear that Dobido was going to collide with its parent world. Chewie, Han, and Anakin Solo had all been sent to aid the evacuation. As Dobido breached through Cern Pidal's atmosphere, titanic gusts of wind scraped the land. Varying as many Cern Pidalians off-world had been occupying the Falcon's time, so when it was time to leave, Dobido was moments from impact. The wind tossed Anakin away from the Falcon's loading ramp as it lifted off. Seconds before getting on board, Chewie abandoned his own escape, picked the boy up, and threw him up into the loading bay. The wind kicked up again, throwing Chewie off his feet. The Falcon's pilot didn't know it didn't stop. Chewbacca howled at the ground in the sky above him as the Falcon flew to safety. He had paid his life debt in full with interest.
And now, an important public service announcement.
Hi, Jedi Padawans and apprentices! Did you know that only you can prevent Rosher fires? Even if your master gets stabbed in the chest with a lightsaber, don't start his pyre in the Rosher forest. Only you can prevent forest fires. Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. I'm Sam.
I am Wookiee friend Christian.
This is Jordan.
Do either of you guys owe a life debt to each other for any particular reason?
It keeps changing hands.
I see.
Save each other every other week.
Yeah. Somebody bought that debt out. So we're recording live, or broadcasting live, I should say. You can't really record live. Broadcasting live from, we just departed the, was it Wook-Roro landing pad, rebuilt after the orbital bombardment. Kashyyyk's looking pretty good these days. Yeah. Recovered from the Yuuzhan-Vong
invasion
and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I have to make mention of, I guess I'll call this an evidence of Terran supremacy, is that on Wikipedia, Kashyyyk is, it's recorded as the Empire renamed it Wookiee Planet C. But you see, the thing is, in Star Wars, you have another language, or another alphabet,
Oribesh,
that corresponds to the English phonemes, the sound parts of the letters, right? And it's called Oribesh, and so they've published pronunciations for all the letters in Oribesh, and the third letter in the Oribesh alphabet is Kresh, not C. So technically, it should be Wookiee Planet Kresh. Galactic Empire.
To be fair, this is actually a whole thing. I wanted to save it for languages episodes, but since you brought it up now, The English language does exist in Star Wars.
Does it?
Yeah. It's more equivalent to more of like a high galactic speech. So it's like almost like that. Latin. Yeah.
And that's, Auribash is just the script.
Yeah. And that's also why things like X-Wings and A-Wings would also have to follow that naming convention in Auribash.
Oh, you're right. I should look up.
But there is an actual explanation for that. We can get into it on a different episode. But
indeed.
It's something I've been looking into because I had the same thoughts too. But back to Kashyyyk.
So when Chewie was dating, I suppose, is the name we would give to it. The courting. Courtship ritual of Chewie's wife, Mallow Tabak. There was sort of another rival for her affections. I forget his name. I think his name would be pronounced Turdco. It's like TVVRDKO or something like that. But anyway.
I would pronounce it something like Torvok, but...
Okay.
But my Wookiees is not great.
You're Shirawook.
Shirawook.
Lots of difficult names in this one. But anyway, he was an albino Wookiee, and he got in a fight at some point, and I believe pulled his claws on Chewie at one point.
Ooh, major no-no.
Oh, yeah.
Which
yeah.
is a major no-no.
And why is that a major no-no within Wookiee culture?
So I think it's kind of the same reason why going after, like, if you can't tell, we're all males on this show.
Is it like flashing your junk to somebody or something?
If your junk was a spike that you impaled your enemies with.
If you've ever gone on YouTube and gone down a rabbit hole of watching street fight compilations because you really just want to see how ugly the human species is. It's a similar thing to a man in single combat with another man going after his genitalia or his eyeballs. You know what I mean? It's just like if you're squaring off against another dude, that's just not part of our sort of ritualized combat.
It's like a cheap shot.
It's sort of a cheap shot, and it just sort of brings that animal level to the fight where okay, now we're really trying to kill each other. We're not just pretending anymore. We're not just doing this to look tough.
We got to remember too, the Wookiees are a civilized species. They're not just bestial animals.
That's exactly it. So culturally, Wookiees, they develop these claws more for climbing, naturally, and it helps them climb trees and stuff. And they really, the Wookiees themselves like to separate themselves from animals. They define themselves as sentient. And obviously this is like a big contention in the Star Wars galaxy where other species see them as animals. The Empire sees them as animals. Yeah. So they're always trying to culturally break that link to being beasts.
Yeah.
And so to pull your claws out is, exactly. Such a bestial, animalistic thing to do that it's just like a strict cultural taboo, which will get you exiled even to the...
And then that segues next greatly to my next point about exile and the exile trope that I'm seeing more and more in Star Wars. It's like everything sort of comes about because of exiles. Zalbar, another Wookiee, or Zalbar, Big Z, he was also branded as Madclaw. If anybody doesn't know, he's from the Knights of the Old Republic.
Two.
Nope.
No one.
One.
One. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a different Wookiee, actually, who's a slaver Wookiee, which is very interesting. Direction. Hanhar, I believe his name was.
Right.
It's the other Wookiee you get in KOTOR 2. But in KOTOR 1, Big Z, the reason he winds up on Taris is essentially because he's exiled. And then, of course, he helps Revan out and all that stuff. And so we've got all these other exiles, like Obi-Wan Kenobi's in exile. The Sith were started because of exiles.
Jedi exiles.
The Night Sisters were exiled.
You're proposing we just kill our enemies instead of exiling them. Is that
I think that's what I'm going for. Or at least chop off their arms and legs. Oh, no, wait a minute. That doesn't work very well either, does it, Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Set them on fire, maybe?
Maybe if you set them on fire, that'll be good.
That won't come back and bite you.
Since we're speaking about multiple amputations, so our Trandoshan slaver friend. Very interesting how his story was presented in the Chewbacca graphic novel. There's a graphic novel called Chewbacca that was published by Dark Horse, and it's the conceit of it is it's like an anthology. So it's a bunch of just sort of semi-related stories that are just stories from Chewbacca's life, just from sort of random periods in it. And Peter Mayhew actually wrote the introduction to this comic book.
For the record, Peter Mayhew is the actor that played Chewbacca in the original
trilogy. Which was kind of cool that he wrote that. But so anyway, So is in this, and this is like one of the first panels in the comic book, is you just see this Trandoshan with like a normal Trandoshan body, except he's got these like short, like old, just really messed up looking limbs, his arms and his legs, because he tried to take Chewbacca as a slave.
Yeah.
And we finally get that payoff that's been set up since A New Hope.
To see a Wookiee tear off.
We know Wookiees can tear people's limbs off. Yeah. Why don't we ever get to see it? And we still don't get to see it.
Just see the aftermath.
We don't actually get to see Chewie ripping off So's limbs. But at least by So's account, Chewbacca ripped off his limbs. And then I also wanted to comment about the relationship between Trandoshan Wookiees. Between Trandoshan and Wookiees. Now the Trandoshans were always trying to hunt the Wookiees.
Yeah.
And how So makes a reference to the pain he feels as his limbs are growing back, but badly, because when you see him in that comic book, it's been like a few decades. Chewie's already dead by this time in the story, and he's just like drinking away his medical retirement at some space station. And so, but his limbs are still stubby.
Yeah.
But then we know from another Trandoshan slaver named Pact, who also tried to kidnap Wookiees. This seems like a bad business idea.
Do you think Trandoshans evolved to grow limbs back because they constantly hunt Wookiees?
You know what? That's a good point I was actually going to make.
Well, and Trandoshans are no slouches either themselves. You know, no human would be able to go melee with a Trandoshan.
No, in fact, I went deep into the Trandoshans for the research, and they're well regarded as being like much more physically robust than the average anthropoid. Like they could take any.
But compared to a Wookiee or perhaps like a Yuuzhan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Wookiee can literally pull his limbs off like a fly.
Yeah.
But here's what I was thinking. Is that we have a similar biological function in real animals, the green annal lizard. And there are some species of salamander, I believe, also
that
do
can
this.
Regrow in.
This behavior called autotophany or something. Yeah. I forget. I wrote the episode. But they can just detach their tail at limb. At will, and then escape from a predator, and the predator eats their limb, and then they escape, right?
Yeah.
So it's like maybe this Trandoshans also can do that with all of their limbs, and so it was just clear that he wasn't going to win the fight.
So he just dropped his arms.
So he just dropped. Maybe that's how we get this legend of Wookiees being able to pull off arms.
So Trandoshans are detaching their arms more so than
A Wookiee is. Maybe as strong as you would expect, like a human rock climber who's 7 feet tall to be. You know, very strong, obviously, but probably couldn't pull off your limbs.
I would almost equate Wookiees to be like orangutan or ape-like, where they would just muscle bundled up together. And they're no slouches at fighting either. Like you see them during the Clone Wars, even in Republic Commando, they're huge.
Well, they're also. Can't forget they're agile. These are tree climbers.
Right. They're not just.
That's big also brutes. That's a very. I was sort of scared by Wookiees in this because I was just thinking of like rock climber dudes. Yeah. If you ever meet those guys, like
totally
people who are seriously into rock climbing are very strong people.
They're dangerous. A dangerous species if you go.
And that's why they need to be controlled.
I was also going to talk about. In terms of Wookiee evolution, because you brought up, you know, climbing and they're like orangutans, but actually they're a little bit more like bears, at least in terms of their face and the fact that they have claws, because primates.
Yeah. Bears are pretty good tree climbers too, actually.
And primates basically don't have claws. Like I can't think of a single.
Clawed primate.
Yeah. And there is some species of bears like panda bear or something that like they almost live in the trees. You know what I mean? They really climb trees a lot.
Like, yeah, black bears can climb trees faster than you can.
Yeah.
Never try to outrun a black bear up a tree.
And I also found a reference to part of the costume for Chewbacca in the movies was based on like a Malamute model. There's like a Malamute head that they just like modified in some back studio somewhere. So it's kind of, bears are canids. I believe they're canids like dogs, right? They're the same genre.
I also wonder, like the Yuuzhan from Splinter of the Mind's Eye,
right?
That species, which is very, it's even more bear-like.
They're very bear.
Yeah. I wonder if that was like one of the ideas of Lucas that he had for the Wookiees, and then it just ended up going to Splinter of the Mind's Eye or something.
Then on the other hand, I believe the Patterson-Gimlin film, that's the famous Sasquatch, the Bigfoot footage that's allegedly real, that people who are like over the age of
30 now,
30, I guess, might know this reference, the Patterson-Gimlin film, is that Chewie looks very much like that.
Yeah.
And the thing about that is that classical conception of Bigfoot is there actually was a primate who, according to the fossil record, looks to have lived in North America called Gigantopithecus that looks pretty much exactly like Chewbacca, except for the skull. The skull looks much more like a gorilla skull.
Yeah.
It doesn't have canines. Chewbacca's nose is also very, it's like a wet nose, like a dog. It's not very primate-like. There are other primates, like they're called prosimians. The, what do you call them? Madagascar. Lemurs. Lemurs and eyes and all those guys. They have noses that are a little bit more like dogs. And they're more distantly related to us than orangutans or even Gigantopithecus. But that's also an interesting thing because that's something I constantly think about. Almost once a day I think about this. This is a very weird thing. But at one point in human history, there was like 8 or 9 different species of humans on the planet at the same time. And that's like a very weird thing to think about because we've only got Homo sapiens sapiens now.
The best ones,
the best ones.
The best ones survived.
But there used to be, you know, a Homo ergaster and Homo afloriensis and Homo habilis. And there was, I think, 6 or 7 and at least 4 or 5. It's been a while since I took my physical anthro class. We're living at the same time. So it is sort of like this idea of, you know, Han Solo hanging out with Chewbacca. And that's kind of a relationship that maybe could have at one time happened on Earth.
I need to see that. A caveman.
And I really like that. But not a caveman, because you're thinking of it as primitive. And as we've seen, Wookiees are anything
I mean,
primitive.
Like a caveman as Han Solo, and then his buddy, sidekick, is like a Neanderthal or something.
And that's another thing, is why did the Empire think it would be easy to enslave them, given what happened?
Risk-reward.
I suppose, like, compared to other societies, they are more primitive.
I don't think they are, though, because they've had the Klatuvak Guild, who's been doing hyperspace scouting for centuries.
Yeah, I guess there's that.
Yeah.
But they don't seem to have...
See it this way, though.
Like, colonized any other planet.
That's just because they've been so colonized by everybody else.
Yeah. Wookiees are pretty rare in the galaxy at large, too. They tend to stick to...
Yeah, they never Kashyyyk. Really got past Kashyyyk, except for the Klatuvak Guild, apparently.
Yeah.
But they're, like, an outlier. I think it's a... Because the Wookiees, they play a big role. What about the droid attack on the Wookiees in the Clone Wars?
It's because of the Klatuvak Guild. The CIS was after the Klatuvak.
So what I'm saying is the Empire sees them as a big threat, so it's better to cripple them right out of the gate, knowing that they're seasoned fighters.
I guess it is maybe the rechristening them as non-sentient is just pure propaganda.
Right, exactly.
Like, the Empire knows. Even Kompnor, who's like the Empire's Gestapo, knows that Wookiees are smart
and dangerous,
but we got to demonize them,
right? Exactly. And
if you
them
do that in,
quickly
in terms of the galactic market, you cut them off a lot more,
right? Exactly. You isolate them and then you enslave them, as challenging as that might be, or then you can outsource it to Trandoshan slavers. They make a little cut of the money, Empire gets cheap slaves. It's a win-win. Except for the Wookiees.
If you're playing KOTOR, or I assume the Star Wars tabletop RPG, Wookiee I assume is a good character to have as your tank in the party, right? They're very high melee, and I guess they can't really wear much armor, at least in KOTOR.
In any of your guys' readings, did you find anything about like a Wookiee martial art or fighting style?
I didn't see anything about that.
Nothing specific.
Although they,
I feel like that would be a cool thing to introduce into the Wookiee lore.
So any martial art is interesting, particularly those if you have any specialty in edged weapons. Yeah. We do know that, and this was prior to, I'm saying this was before 5000 BBY, prior to the old Sith Wars, we know that a distant ancestor of Chewbacca, Baka, built a sword. So right, if he built a sword and you see what the sword looks like in KOTOR, it's a fairly sophisticated sword. If he could build that, I imagine he also knows how to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's probably some sort of Wookiee martial art, at least with swords.
Associated with bladed weapons, yeah.
And then that's something I also wanted to, now that you guys bring it up, it's an interesting thing in terms of what's survived through our own history. How we think of martial arts as Asian, but it's like, I don't know why exactly this is how it's shaped out, but it's not like Germany and Prussia and France and Norway all didn't have their own
fighting systems.
Very sophisticated fighting systems.
Yeah. Or Aztecs or Mayans.
Or Mayans.
Maori and
literally
every civilization that fights.
Every cultural, not just civilized, I would just say civilization. If you say civilization, we assume they fight. Yes. That's mostly what civilizations appear to do. But anyway, every cultural group on Earth has their own martial art, I think.
Yeah.
And so, just like they have their own language. And so, I think you're right on. There probably is some Wookiee martial art. I didn't see one. The only fairly fleshed out martial art in Star Wars is basically the Achani fighting system, which is sort of vaguely referenced, and then more specifically Taras Kasai, which I believe that Achani may have used, but I can't remember exactly now.
Yeah, we'll do an episode on fighting systems, which will be sweet.
Oh, it will be my magnum opus.
Oh, sorry, just before we go, I did find there is apparently on Wikipedia, there is a Wookiee martial art.
Oh, I'm
missed opportunity.
I'm in love.
Called Rushu.
Rushu.
Starting with a W. It was a form of martial art developed by the Wookiees, and often only Wookiees were capable of performing it. While Wookiees were more often known for their exertion of brute force, a Rushu was surprisingly widely known due to the natural violence of Wookiees' society and rights.
Yeah, interesting.
You have to be 7 feet tall and be able to bench press a truck.
I'm looking tune in at, next Saturday, and I will be doing a Rushu class live on Twitch. Anybody wants to join me?
Yeah.
So it looks like the source of that is all introduced. Actually, it looks like games.
Yeah, is it in the Masters of Taras Kasai video game?
I'm guessing. It's wizards.com. I think
so it's the RPG.
Yeah.
It's one of the Star Wars RPG books, which makes sense. They'll do a lot of world building there.
Yeah, so they have like a hero's guide and stuff, and they introduce the Wookiee martial art, Rushu.
I would love to know more about Rushu.
Yeah.
I've actually been thinking about this. I haven't done any research, but I really hope people
Rushi.
I really hope people have reconstructed any martial arts mentioned in Star Wars and made extensive YouTube channels about it.
Exclusively that training. Sounds
like a lot of fun.
Man, someone's got to make a fan film now of
learning.
A Wookiee Kung versus Fu an Achani.
Have you heard of combat. Kung Fu Panda? Yeah. kind of to bring it back to Chewbacca really quick before we go here. One big controversy for him is he doesn't get a medal in A New Hope.
Oh, he doesn't?
No, he doesn't.
No, it's been it's been a fan contention for a long time why Chewbacca doesn't get a medal. He's the one that convinced Han to turn the Falcon around.
That's something I actually learned for the first time.
They bought into that Imperial propaganda about nonsensians. Yeah.
But it does turn out that
they
thought
he was Han's pet.
Straight up space racism. Yeah.
No, but it does turn out that he did get a medal, just wasn't given one at the ceremony because they say that Leia was too short to actually get up around his neck. So he was awarded it later. And the Disney movies try to fix this by giving him Han's medal and Han is killed.
Stupid.
Yes. Agreed.
Just stupid.
But just while we're talking about Chewbacca. And do
even they can't even do fan service right.
Yeah. Also, just very quickly, Chewbacca is quite old by the time he dies. 200 years. You got to think how much of the galaxy he's seen, how much change. He fought in the Clone Wars as a pretty renowned like general.
He's an old ass man by A New Hope.
Yeah.
He's a very old dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
but he still looks pretty good.
He looks good for a 200-year-old Wookiee. Yeah.
But maybe it's like dogs. I mean, can you really tell
how old,
like an old dog from a young dog? Like once it's an adult dog, as long as its hip's not broken or anything.
I mean, he would have been old even in the original trilogy.
Yeah, like even
by he was still like 185.
By the Clone Wars, he's still old. Yeah. And he was friends with like old characters like Yoda.
Yeah.
And Yoda knows him by name too, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's cool to see his relationship. Like he's a character that has seen everything from 200 years ago, past the prequels, past the sequels.
And also think about what his profession was before the CIS invaded. Is he was
freedom fighter.
No.
Oh.
Before then, because slavery on Kashyyyk was revived after the CIS, right? But before the CIS, he was a navigator for the Klatuvak Guild.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they made all these hyperspace routes that are super dangerous. And then Gumbaki, I believe, he was the leader of the Guildmaster, gave Chewbacca all of their charts, right? He was one of the guys who was given that data that the CIS invaded Kashyyyk for. And so then he used that when he was with Han Solo because he knew where all the
secrets. He knew all the stuff, yes.
So Han Solo's career was also made by Chewbacca.
Chewbacca is the unsung hero of Star Wars.
That's how Han Solo was such a good smuggler is because he was using all the secret Wookiee roots.
Right, yeah.
So it's a very interesting revelation.
All comes back around.
That Chewie has much more to do with the Star Wars story than is
you could say single-handedly responsible for the Death Star, too, because without him turning Han around.
And I also just recently had this... Yeah, you turned Han around. But I had this revelation that it's really sort of takes a lot of courage as a filmmaker to have a main character who doesn't have any lines in a language that your audience can understand.
Yeah.
And he has quite a fair amount of lines, but we don't know what they are. What
him
any
and
are
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two characters.
Yeah, two characters.
It's an interesting... Mando speaks, though. Did you say Mando?
I said R2.
No, R2. Oh,
R2. R2-D2.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. And then, of course, George Lucas, to great fame. And after writing this episode, I'm so excited for our Christmas special. It's going to be great. George Lucas then used that trope of characters you can't understand, perhaps a little too much, but... Anything else about Wookiees and Chewbacca?
Just pour one out for my homie.
Yep, pour one out for your homie.
Died on saving little Anakin Solo.
I'm sorry if this is the first time you've ever...
Spoilers.
You've learned about this.
Yeah.
21-year-old spoiler, the novel that Chewbacca died in.
Man, that's incredible. That's 21 years old already.
1999 is when that novel came out.
Brutal.
Same year as Phantom Menace. Chewbacca dies saving a Solo. I also think Chewbacca didn't really like his wife or his son.
Because he keeps abandoning them.
Because the second the Solos have kids, he's like, my life debt extends to them. I have to stay away from Kashyyyk forever.
Well, maybe. It could be like a cultural thing. We don't know what like bonds are between Wookiees.
Yeah, the cultural thing is that his relationship was on the rocks with his wife.
Sure, that's enough.
Chewie's assumption. Secret life.
He was drunk on Siren plant wine.
Because all the PTSD because of the wars he was fighting in.
That's right. All right.
And on that note.
Coming up on the Mar Terranor sector.